Anyway, about the idea that the small group Bible study can be a method whereby discipling or disciple making or discipleship can take place. And I think that's real important for us to understand that. That it's simply a means to accomplish the process of disciple making. And if we keep that mentality, I think we'll understand a lot more clearly how this fits in to our responsibility to fulfill the Great Commission. So that's the kind of context I want you to be thinking of as we go through some of these things. And I didn't put down any scripture on any of those things because primarily we're talking about a method, a means. And the principle is making disciples and studying the Word together. But the means or the method are, you know, can vary quite a bit. And this is just a means and a method of doing that. And as we go through, I want you to feel free to ask any question as we go. And I have a saying that I've adopted, and that's the only foolish question is one that's not asked. So I'd appreciate you asking any question that comes to your mind, because we want everybody to really feel free to discuss and talk about what we want to talk about today, so we can really get down to the how-tos and what-ifs kind of a situation. Okay, let's just walk through our outline. I have a couple of opportunities for us to do some work together in a workshop situation, so we'll spend some time at that, but as we walk through here, we'll naturally take those places and deal with them. Okay, the first thing in how to organize a small group Bible study is probably recruiting. Let's see, we're going to have problems with that door over there. I think they want to get into the next room. Yeah. Is the area of recruiting. In other words, the selection process of who's going to be in my Bible study group. And as you'll see in this outline that I've put in several places this idea of prayer. And I've been learning more and more just the necessity of saturating everything you're doing with prayer, because it helps us to focus on God and not on ourselves. We become aware that it's not our work that is the important thing, but it's God's work, what God is doing. Okay. In our group? Uh-huh. Yeah, I probably will. Huh? No longer a small group. Yes. No, this is the class. Small group Bible study?
Yeah.
Good. That will be one of the points we cover, is the size. We'll try to get some more of these out to those who didn't get one. Maybe just to recap what we've talked about is that we're putting the small group Bible discussion or the small group Bible study in the context of making disciples. And we've mentioned that it's just a means, it's just a method. The principle is making disciples and studying the Word of God, and we're just using the small group context as a method or means of doing that. And so we're just going to walk through this outline here and give you a couple opportunities to think through some situations to maybe get an idea and a feel for it. First thing we're talking about is the idea of saturating everything that we do with prayer. That helps us to focus on God. That helps us to realize that it's not our responsibility to produce results, it's God's, as we are faithful and available. So prayer is a very important part of it. And I think we need to emphasize prayer more than we usually do. So I've put in here maybe the obvious, but I think we need to make sure that it is a part of our thinking and planning. Okay, the first thing I mentioned on the area of prayer is the things to pray for. Yeah, to give you some suggestions, is the idea of discernment. Discernment in the recruiting process, or who to select. And we see this example in Jesus' life also, as he chose the disciples. It was a time of prayer that prepared him for the final selection of those disciples. So I think one of the key things we need to remember as we recruit is to really ask the Lord for discernment on who is it that I want to choose to be in this study, or to recruit for this small group. The second thing is there in the area of attitude, and I gave kind of three criteria there, just kind of examples of the kinds of things that we need to be expressive of if we're going to really excite people about the possibility there. And I've used the idea of positive, enthusiastic, challenging. All these kinds of things I think will challenge people and give them a desire to be a part. I've heard a statement made that I think is probably true here. If you want people to bleed, then you've got to hemorrhage. So if you're going to really get people excited about a small group Bible study, you've got to be excited about it. And pray that if you don't have that kind of an attitude and enthusiasm, the Lord will give it to you. Because that's what's really going to communicate to people, is that kind of excitement. It's contagious. And people can really pick up on that. And I think your enthusiasm will follow through into the group. The second thing is in the area of selection, getting down to the actual selection of those who are going to be in the small group. And I think that first area, qualities, is sometimes not easy to discern, but I think it's something that's necessary. Those three things that I list under there, available, faithful, and teachable, maybe you've heard in a little different order, it's called the idea of the fat Christian, faithful, available, and teachable. And but those are the kind of qualities that you're looking for in really people who are interested in growing in Christ. They will have these kind of qualities. Now, these things will be observable, and that's what you need to be sensitive to in determining those qualities. For instance, who's interested in getting more? Who's around all the time asking questions? Who's the guy that always does what you ask him to do, or the gal that always does what you ask her to do? And you begin to see some of these qualities of faithfulness, availableness, and really teachable, that the kinds of questions they ask to really help them grow in Christ. So as you can be sensitive to those people you're around, you can begin to see who would be a good possibility in a small group Bible discussion. Keeping in mind that this small group would be a real resource out of which, or a fishing pond, as Gene shared, to find those one, two, three, whoever it is that's excited about being discipled or growing as a Christian. So I think that's probably the first thing, is to discern those kinds of qualities that would lend itself to a discipling relationship or a discipleship relationship. Then the second thing I list under the selection there is association. And in our discussion group, we talked about this a little bit, that I think the best thing that we can do in the idea of association is that those that we come in natural contact with, in other words, we have some sphere of influence in their lives already, so there's some natural contact there, and that gives some real continuity to the time in the Bible study, that there's some time outside of the Bible study also, and then you can begin to develop that relationship with a person in an ongoing way through a context other than the Bible study. Sometimes if we get in a Bible study environment, that's the only environment they see you in, and it's a little bit sterile, and they maybe can't learn some things that they need to learn from you in other contexts. So I think finding those who are in the natural flow of things in your own life, your own schedule, and where you might be. Then the other thing I list there is homogeneity, and that deals with more of the idea of a common interest or something that is grouping them together. maybe similar needs or similar level of growth or these kinds of things. I think that will help for people to identify with one another in the small group. And as we deal more with the dynamics of how to draw them together, I think that'll come more clearly too. Someone did mention the idea of size, and probably 5 to 8 people is a good size or a good number of people to deal with. That way the dynamic of interpersonal relationships can really take place in the whole group. When you get more than that, usually there can't be that interrelatedness in an in-depth way, and that's what you want to begin to develop.
Are you saying only 4 couples then, or a couple?
Yeah, probably, something like that. Good question. But that keeps it at a manageable number where you can have good time with those people in terms of being able to express within the group their own thoughts, their own needs, struggles, etc. Good. Any questions about that area of recruiting that maybe you've experienced yourself or heard about? This could vary too, and like I say, this homogeneity or the common interest kind of thing, you could have a real spread in ages and still be very successful in terms of what you're trying to do in the group. So I don't know, the age thing can go either way, really. So you could have a real spectrum of age, or you could isolate on a particular age group. Probably there's more flexibility there. Good question. Yeah, we really haven't talked about the objective in terms of getting down to what kind of a study you would want to have, but we'll cover that a little bit here. That there may be a study that you would want to be evangelistic, and maybe there's some who are Christians but not sure about it that would help in that way. So it could be a mix even of Christians and non-Christians. Okay, let's talk about the planning then. And again, I list their prayer as the number one thing. That as you approach the area of planning, pray for wisdom. That God would really give you His insight, His point of view on what to do. I think that's critical, that we see things from God's perspective and not ours or man's. But to really let God show us. Then also in the area of creativity. So many times we get locked into the traditional way that things are done. Something was done this way, so I'm going to do it the same way. When you get objective, then you can really be creative. Find out what the problem is or what the situation is. Then ask God to really show you a way to do it effectively. And you'll be amazed how ideas will come to your mind that you've never heard about anywhere, and you maybe even wonder whether they work. But I think as we really make ourselves available, not in the old traditional way, but really let God lead us, that we'll come up with very creative ideas and different ways of dealing with some of the situations and studies perhaps. Okay, then in the area of the objective, and that's where you want to determine what the content of the study is going to be. And one of the things, this is one area that we can deal with as a group. I'll hand out some workshop situations here we can think about together and give you some time to work on. But you need to find out what their needs are, first of all, as you've selected those individuals. Find out where their needs are. This is something that we talked about in our discussion group also, was the idea that so many times we try to minister to people on the basis of what we think they need. And after we're gone, what we suggested they do, they don't do anymore because we're gone. And so we don't really bring about any lasting change. And so our real objective is to bring about a lasting change in a person's life. And the most effective way to do that, or perhaps even the only way to do that, is by working through their felt need. In other words, where do they believe God is calling them to deal with? And so one way to do this is through asking questions. And I'll give you an example here. We had a neighborhood situation of, well, I guess it was about six couples, and we wanted to find out what we needed to study for the next period of time. We had just finished a Bible study in Mark, and we were trying to determine where to go next. And so I asked him these, I guess, five questions, basically. First of all, what character or characteristic of God would you like to know more about? Then I asked him, what book of the Bible would you like to study most? Then I asked him, what area do you feel the most or the least equipped in? Then I asked him the question, what do you feel is your greatest need at this time? And the last question I asked him was, what do you feel is your highest priority of those previous four questions? So as we did that, we got a myriad of answers, but there began to show up a pattern of things in their lives or things that they wanted to deal with that, well, I'll just read some of them here for example. Like character of God was God's power or God's forgiveness. We had several with forgiveness. God's sovereignty. God's purpose, the Holy Spirit. The books were Galatians, Ephesians, Revelation, that always comes in there. Romans, and we had several that desired to study in Romans. Then equipping, the idea of prayer came through strong in about five different indications. Greatest need, that varied quite a bit in terms of where people were, but forgiveness came through again, faith, understanding faith, and the Lordship of Christ. Then, for the most part, the highest priority was, again, the greatest need, which was interesting. So what we did is that after we looked at all these, we summarized it and took a total, and we got an indication that probably the best thing we could do to meet the needs of the most was to do a 4-week study in the book of Romans in chapters 5, 6, 7, and 8, which met a lot of those needs that the people had. See, so we were doing something that was related to the specific needs of the people involved. Well, this is a very high motivation factor. Now, as they see the relevancy of what we're doing to their life, then they begin to apply it because that's what they desire. And so in the same way, we need to be sensitive to the needs of others in this small group Bible study so we can minister to where they are. One other way to do it, and this is something we've done in my Sunday school class, is to give a survey. And I put that down there. And again, this particular survey was a survey of about 30 questions that dealt with the Christian life. And out of that came some real specific needs. Now we can see that, okay, let's begin to deal with some of these needs in our Sunday school. So even in that kind of context, you can do the same kind of thing with a survey or a series of questions. Find out where the people are, what their needs are, and then begin to minister to them. Let me pass out this workshop situation here. I'm sure we're not going to have enough to go around, but maybe we can share some here. And I want to give you an opportunity to work on this for about 5 or 10 minutes or so, and then we'll talk about some of the things that maybe you discover. This first question, and it deals with this idea. And, it says, I have six young men who want to be led in a Bible study. They have been in several Bible studies and are all able to do in-depth original investigative Bible studies. I asked each of them to tell me what their greatest felt need was at this time and got the following responses. Patience, orderliness, unselfish love, being a better father, a fighting spirit, being more of an initiator in relationships. What would you suggest is a good Bible study for these men? So take a few minutes to think that over, and maybe we'll get some of your suggestions. Just as you see some of those needs, what you would suggest as a possible Bible study. Just give you a kind of a feel for how to go about determining what kind of a Bible study would be good. for this particular group. There are some individuals in here who would be ineligible for this exercise since they were a part of this group. Unless they have some other ideas. I'll give you a couple more minutes to think about it. Okay, let's see if someone has got some ideas about what we could do to meet the needs of these individuals. What would be some suggestions on what could be done with these young men and their felt needs? Anybody got any ideas? Yes, over here.
Since they've done a lot of in-depth original investigative study themselves to find each one of those six-man models that probably don't get
there. Good. Good. To take a topical approach to each one of those areas, and since they have the experience, to let them investigate for themselves those areas. Good. That would be a good suggestion. Any other ideas that come up, Kathy?
I would think that if they were to take several characters from the Bible that really have displayed those characteristics and really look at how they appropriated them and expressed them and how they reacted.
Excellent. Good. In light of a character who displayed those particular qualities.
And what God thought of
them. Yeah. Good. Excellent. Good suggestion. Any others? Okay, and see how some of these qualities were displayed in David's life. Just take a particular character in light of these particular needs and see how that would come out. Excellent. William. That's right.
On that.
That's very good.
Point out how it
was not displayed. Yeah.
Why he failed.
That's very good.
Well, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Well, I'm positive. I just preached on that not too long ago. That Solomon in Proverbs chapter 4, he said, I'm going to teach your children how. And I'm going to teach you what my dad taught me. And he said, when I was a young child, tender, my dad taught me about everything else to get rid of me.
He was prepared for that.
It was time to take over the throne because the Solomon what you want. And David was taught Solomon taught the child to get wisdom.
Good.
So he naturally prayed, God give me wisdom.
Yeah. Good. Someone else have an idea over here? Sorry. Good. Let me share with you what we did do in this case. This was a real case. What we decided to do, as the Lord led us, was to take that specific quality and, in light of that quality, how the character of God met that need out of who God was, how he met that specific need. So it became a character study of God. What we did was we had four criteria, actually. One was to define it, that particular characteristic of God, what it was, what it looked like, and how we could experience it in our own lives. So it became a very practical thing. And as we further worked it out, I had each one of those guys with that specific need lead the study that week in that particular area. So it turned out, I think, to be a very profitable time as we reviewed what we did do. But as you've already heard, the possibilities are really unlimited. But we need to really creatively think, how can we meet those needs? And to really respond to the needs of people, not just say our own ideas, our own thinking, but where is God leading those people, and be responsible for that. Good. Okay, in this area of format, as we suggested, there's several different ways of approaching the problem. You can take a topical study, a book study, a character study, all these different ways. But keep in mind, relating it to the needs of the people. I think that's the key thing to remember there. Then the standards, you need to determine some kind of standards, as that will really help, I think, in the discipline of the group, how long it's going to last. I would suggest that you do it on a short-term basis, say 4 weeks or 6 weeks, something along these lines, for several reasons. One, that it helps them to have a successful experience in a short term, which will encourage them all the more to desire to be a part. And sometimes our attention span is not very long, and if we go on for, we're going to do a 3-year Bible study in Romans, that sometimes it might be a little bit discouraging, and we might lose heart. So to keep it short term, I think it'll keep our attention high, and I think that'll be helpful to really get the group doing what it needs to be doing. Then in the area of preparation, that there needs to be a minimum standard, such as a minimum of 1 hour preparation, which isn't much, but it allows them to really get ready for the time together. And you don't want the study to be a share your ignorance study. And that's what happens many times, is people come unprepared, they get in the group, and they just share from their ignorance. In other words, what they don't know. So you want it to be a time of preparation, not, you know, well, minimum 8 hours preparation. That would be a little bit overwhelming, I think, to most people. But as you make it a minimum standard, say an hour or 2 hours, then usually they'll spend more time in preparing if the material is real, meeting their need and helping them where they are. Then the idea of a place, I think one thing that I try to do is keep it in the same place. It helps for regularity. People can be more regular in coming, and the next area of time that to really make it a time when it's convenient for most in terms of being able to be there so they can be prompt and be there regularly. And the idea of frequency, and that again determines or is determined by the schedule of everybody that is involved. I've had every week, every other week. It just depends on the situation. Either one seems to work out pretty good in the studies I've been in, small group Bible studies, that both can, I think, serve the purpose. So just on a regular basis of some kind. Yes?
I had a comment there. I remember some years ago that there was a desire to go through the Old Testament. We started doing that, and the duration was too long.
Yeah.
But I think one can overcome that a bit by saying, all right, we'll do this, but we'll spend 4 weeks on it, then we'll spend 2 weeks on something else, then we'll come back. Because by that time, those that have lost out have a two-week chance to catch up.
Good thought, yeah.
And then get back in again, and they won't drop out. But I think a lot of people dropped out because they kind of didn't get their reading done and so forth, and in order to cover it within a certain time,
yeah,
they had to have quite a bit of reading help on the outside.
Good idea. Good suggestion. And that's the way, when you've planned it through and really allowed God to give you wisdom, then you can, I think, really be flexible in terms of what's done. And that's the key thing, is just, you know, really allowing God to lead you and how to structure it and how to go about it. Starting and stopping on time, I'm a real bug on that. And the Lord is always helping me by those who don't show up on time, and I run over time, and so. But it's something I think that really helps protect people in the use of their time, to really be punctual, starting on time and stopping on time. Then one other I suggested, and that's always reserving the right to kill rabbits. Not in the sense of physically, but when you run off the track a bit, to reserve the right to bring the discussion back onto the topic at hand. So I think that should be one of the ground rules, that if the group gets too far out of bounds, that to bring them back to what you're trying to deal with and discuss. Good. Any questions about that planning phase and getting ready for that? Okay, let's go on. And how to lead the group. Again, the area of prayer there is at the top under preparation. Again, wisdom, that as you prepare, God would give you His view of things, to give you His perspective on what needs to be dealt with. And secondly, in preciseness, as we will deal with here in a second on this area of the questions, of being able to develop questions that are precise to the point of getting to the objective that you want to get at, as you've thought through it and try to prepare for the study group. Then preparing your objectives for the particular study, you want to write out a clear objective that is measurable in terms of what you want to take place during that study. That will give you a guideline or a sight point at which to keep the study on the right track. And as you develop the plan for the study, you can see how these things relate to the objective, and you can eliminate those things that don't contribute to the objective. And so it becomes a very helpful tool.
Do you recommend that weekly or overall?
Yeah, I would have objective for each study, particularly the content that, as we suggest in this next workshop situation that, you know, each person would, how did I word that? Someone want to read that second? I got it here. Your objective is that each person would be able to recognize what love is when they experience it, see it, or express it. So it's the idea that you take each study and have an objective around each study that when you get done with that study, there would be a specific thing that has taken place. So you can plan in light of that.
That objective should be based around the need of the thing.
That's right. That's right. Very good point. Good. Okay, then the idea of an outline is to, again, think through your material and outline it, those things that you want to cover for sure, so you make sure that when you're planning and when you work out the questions that you've covered those points that need to be communicated in the study. Okay, then we get down to this area of questions. And I think this is a real crucial part of planning or preparing for a small group Bible discussion, is the development of questions. Through questions, you'll be able to lead and keep it, the study Bible-centered, topic-centered, and group-centered. And that's real key, that these questions be thought out ahead of time, written down, so you can use these questions in really guiding the group. And so it's real critical on this area of questions. And I've listed here several kinds of questions. The launching questions, and these are basically designed to warm up the group, to get the group thinking together. And these are kind of the more open questions, and we'll talk about some in a minute here. And the observation questions, which are basically asking what is there, helping them to see what is there, observing in the passage or the particular study situation. Then the interpretation questions, what is the meaning of what's being dealt with? Then the correlation is the relevancy of the topic or the area that you're studying. And the application is how can we obey what we've heard, what we dealt with. Let me suggest some of those here. Suggest a couple of launching questions. What were the major truths you discovered from this passage? Something to just to warm up the group, to get them thinking together. Someone share with the group the most impressive thought he had about this passage. You know, these kinds of questions can really help to, I think, bring the discussion to a start. Then the idea of discovery questions, or I should say observation questions. What are the main truths of this passage? How would you express this passage in your own words? Someone describe the events of this passage, just to have them make the observations. Then the interpretation questions, what does this word mean? What does the context imply about the meaning of such and such? Do we use that word or phrase in the same word today? Dealing with the meanings of what's there. And the idea of context, that kind of thing. Okay, then the area of correlation is the idea, how does this relate to what was said earlier? Why do you think this person did what he did in this situation? Why did he say this right after he said this? Correlating truths within the passage you're studying to what's going on. And in the area of the application questions, what difficulties do you face in applying this to your life? What can be done to overcome these difficulties in your own life? How could a person keep that from happening in his life? These kinds of questions, I think, will bring it down to the point of personal application. How do I apply this into my life? Why don't we again take about 5 minutes and deal with that second question in the workshop situation in light of 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8, to develop some of those questions. Now, you aren't going to be able to develop a whole study, of course, but maybe just one or two questions in the various areas that I've listed there, launching or observation or interpretation, correlation, application, to maybe get a feel for it again as you go through and develop these questions yourself, and then as they are shared, we can get a better understanding of how this really works in a situation to develop those. About another minute. Let's get some ideas about what kind of things you maybe were able to put down. Someone want to share some of their questions, or one question per person, and then we'll get to hear from more people. I'd like to share one of their questions that they developed. Share with us basically what kind of question you wanted to have that question be. Have any launching questions? Any comments?
I asked which aspect of love did you spend the most time with?
Boy, like their definition of love for different people. Start to group off, get everybody's feeling of what they consider love.
Good. Get them right into the topic and.
Yeah.
Good.
What the world considers love.
Okay. Good idea. Good. Specific things that we can do in relation to the truth that we've looked at.
Observation, interpretation, I suppose.
Okay.
What we learn that love isn't.
Good. That's right, because there's several things in there that tell us love is not.
No, it's basically a negative.
Good. Someone else?
That's a good observation there, isn't it? there's more spoken of it, what love is not, rather than what love is.
Part of the correlation question, I thought about how Christ's death.
Good. Correlating other truths to that particular passage.
For interpretation, why is Paul his characteristics of love?
Rather than say a definition.
Right.
Good.
This passage has always amazed me because he lists specific things about love, whereas I tend to just think of love as being love. And it seems to me that a lot of these things work in things like love is something to be worked at, which is not the way I automatically think of love.
Maybe like Gene was sharing too, the idea of choice is involved. And the idea of measurability. That we can tell when there is love by the character. So you could deal with some of those things through that question. Good.
Correlation is why is this chapter stuck in the way?
Good. That's right.
Good chapter.
Yeah. Good question.
An observation that love is patient. And you say, why? I remember a friend commenting long ago that if you don't ever ask the Lord for patience, if you don't want trouble, because you don't get patience unless you have trouble to cope with. And so you look at this again, love is patience. That means you're going to have to love the unlovely.
Good. Anyone else? Yeah.
Another thing, kind of that not showing them is actually withholding it, and kind of or to talk about times when you're not showing those things and what it means to withhold application.
Mm-hmm. I have a sheet here. Pass this out. I guess at the end here with this last part. And that's the idea of some of the relatedness of these questions. So we'll try to deal with that too. Maybe I'll just start around here. Give some question criterion that deals with these various categories of questions. And it may be helpful just to get a better feel for it as you write out questions to really see whether they are indeed getting at these things. Good. I think we got a feel for that, and as we express some of those responses, I think we can better grasp that. Okay. Plan out an introduction and or conclusion. So you kind of tie the ends together. You introduce the particular topic, why you're studying that topic, etc., to again guide the group and to really direct them that way. Then make out a time breakdown before you have the study. In other words, you know, we're going to pray for 5 minutes. We're going to deal with this particular scripture question or series of questions for 10 minutes, this particular series for 15 minutes, etc. So you have a schedule of, you know, where you want to be at one particular time. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to be locked into that schedule, but it gives you the flexibility to know where you are in order to end on time and still get through, you know, some essential things. So it becomes very, very helpful to plan ahead and to schedule ahead how much time you're going to spend in each area and doing each thing that you want to deal with. So I think that's real crucial, too, in guiding the group, is to know where you're going and how much time it's going to take and try to tie things together that way. The last thing I put down there was anticipate questions, and that's think ahead as you go through and ask those questions. Think of all the possible responses you could get, and I think that'll help prepare you in the situation. When those questions come up, you will have already thought them through, and they won't be cold to you, and you won't be caught off guard, and you'll be able to respond, well, you know, this is a way to relate to that. So think ahead and anticipate questions that could come up from the questions you're dealing with or the particular areas you're dealing with. I think that'll be real helpful to you to keep the group moving ahead rather than bogged down because there's a question that you haven't thought about. Okay, the area of participation. Again, this is something that develops as you get involved in the process. You know, we're not always instant leaders, and it takes some learning. So don't feel afraid if some of these things are new to you or, you know, are difficult for you. They're things that can be learned. And pray again. Ask God for the ability to direct the group. I think that's real, real critical there. Develop oneness and commitment. That's what you want to see take place in the group, is this oneness and a commitment to one another. Pray that all would be teachable. And pray that you'd be sensitive to the needs of the individuals within the group as you are directing and leading the group. Then the objectives of the participation are to meet the needs of the people there, and so that's why you need to be sensitive to those needs, so you can specifically discern those needs as questions are shared or thoughts are shared, that you can really respond to those and direct one another to those specific needs. Then this interaction with one another is real key, and we share some suggestions down below of how to do that. But you don't want one of these mama bird type studies where you've got the people in the, and here you are, and everybody is, you know, responding back and forth to you. Now, that's real difficult to get away from, because people are usually looking to you as the leader, and they're the one that is responding to you. What you want to get to is an interaction, you know, of all the members one to another. And that's sometimes difficult to achieve, but that's what you're after. You're after this interaction of one to another. And so there are some ways that you can help promote that, and we'll deal with those in a second. But be sure that you're applying the principles. It's not just intellectual knowledge, but it's down to the point of application is where you want to get. It's how does it really relate to my life? And the purpose is to find what the Bible teaches, not what somebody thinks. And so that's one reason I would suggest the commentaries would be a secondary in nature, that not to bring commentaries and say, well, say, so-and-so thinks this or so-and-so says this. To really have personal investigation and original investigation by the members, and not to count on that commentary as the final word, to really use the Bible. Then the other key is to developing those relationships. In the context of discipling, we want to develop relationships, and so that's what we want to see take place within the small group context, an idea. Then this idea of guiding is to call on people specifically. That'll help to bring out those that maybe wouldn't be as prone to share, but would have some very good things to share. Refer to what others have said. Steve, did you hear what Bill said? And this kind of thing. So you can really draw attention within the group, one to another. then ask others to answer questions from others. This also helps to bring the group to this kind of relationship, and I think that's an effective means. Allow for periods of silence. A lot of times we just panic, and when somebody doesn't say something, we're, you know, thinking that something's wrong. But you've got to allow people to think, and while they're thinking, they're not talking. So there will be periods of silence, and the important thing is to allow for those and let people think them through. Don't discourage tension. Tension can be a good thing if you use it properly, and it can stimulate and I think can bring enthusiasm to a group. So tension isn't always a bad thing. The control of domineering people, sometimes you have to have a particular individual that wants to dominate the time, and there may be a time that you would have to ask that person to not share as much, or in some way get more personal time with them afterwards to deal with that, and to keep that from taking place. So I think that's another thing that will help the group together, is to...
That would be handled outside of the study.
Well, I think probably that's the best place to handle it, is just some personal time with that person, sharing with them, you know, some of the things about it. So that could take place. And encourage responses. If you want people to really be open and sharing, encourage them to share, and really draw them out that way by encouraging them when they do share. Don't put people down. You just pour water on a fire, basically, and you discourage by criticizing or putting someone down when they share something. And a good rule would be not to contradict or negate them directly, but just share, well, you know, what do some of you other guys think, or some of the other gals think? Don't contradict them directly, say, no, you're wrong, but to really lead into some other responses. So there's flexibility there, and they don't feel like they've really been shut off or cut off. And answer unrelated questions afterwards. If, you know, somebody comes up with something that's really off the subject, say, you know, that's really a good question. Won't I see you after the study, or let's talk about that after the study. And so they do feel that you're responding to, you know, what they're thinking about, but you're still not detracting from the direction of the study and the objective of the study at hand. Then the last couple, which deals, I think, with a real key also, is the idea of admitting when you don't know the answer. Many times we think that, well, if we don't know, we'll fake it. And we just go on and on and on and don't, you know, deal with the issue at all. Admit it when you don't know the answer. That's not going to make them think any less of you, but even more so, they'll respect you for your willingness to admit that. And that last part, which relates very closely to it, is being vulnerable, being willing to share your own struggles, your own weaknesses. I know that sometimes that I deal with that a lot myself, just being willing to share what I'm going through that could be very helpful for those that are in your group struggling with the same kinds of things. Okay, let's get to the last part here. We're running over time a little. How to evaluate. I think this was not an original subject or topic, but I think it's real key that we understand how to evaluate what we've done. And again, prayer comes in there for yourself. If you're evaluating yourself, that you'd be honest about it, objective about it, and that you would really have integrity. And again, I have a little handout here I'll hand out just on suggested things to look for when you're evaluating that can help you, because I think it's something that as we're accountable, it helps us to really stay on the track and to continue to improve in what we're doing. So I think evaluation is an important part of what we're doing.